If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.
BP added more than $70 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022 by making investments from coast to coast. Investments like building charging hubs for fleets of electric buses in California and starting up new infrastructure in the Gulf of Mexico. It's and, not or. See what doing both means for energy nationwide at bp.com/investing in America.
Spring has sprung, and that means it's time for the Bay Bridge Boat Show, April 12th through 14th at the Bay Bridge Marina in Stevensville, Maryland. Spend a day on the bay filled with food, music, and fun for the whole family. Take a stroll on the docks or sit in on free boating seminars. The boating season starts at the Bay Bridge Boat Show. For tickets and info, visit baybridgeboatshow.com.
Racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Banjor, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey guys, welcome to Shift and Steer. I'm Matt the Motorator DeAndrea here with Aaron Hagar. How are you?
Good, buddy. I'm in a warehouse, so it might be a little echoey in here.
There's a lot going on. You're down in SoCal, although you've been busy. We haven't had time to connect. And just before we get started, Brad's traveling. He's got some stuff to take care of, so he's going to be out today. So it's just Aaron and I holding down the fort.
Yes, we are.
But you know, the Shift and Steer listeners know that you are getting ready for this summer trip, this long Antarctic trip in the Jeep, and I think you found some friends to also drive the Defender, right? You're taking a break both vehicles, but you were trying to get them outfitted and equipped and tested and kind of broken in and make sure everything works, and so there's quite a bit of prep.
because we're going to be 5 weeks committed. Now we're doing the Arctic Circle. So yeah, I know
Arctic Circle.
There's been some discussion about which. Yeah, like, how are you getting it there? Well, we're going to ship it via dolphin. You know.
Yeah. Listen, anything is.
Maybe whale.
None of it surprises me.
But yeah, super fun. So I'm here at Tiny Rig, which is in Westminster, right? Westminster, California. Right near Huntington Beach.
Yeah.
So I'm right near Huntington Beach. And so I've been here and at Goose Gear. And we're doing kind of the last big push on the Gladiator. And this is really, really exciting. You know, this is a pretty high-end hobby.
Yeah.
I definitely have relationships and we're definitely working through it. But no matter how you cut it, it's a very high-end hobby. And because I'm representing as an ambassador, you know, I have to really make sure that every detail of this build is up to par. You know, there's no, you know, duct tape wires here and there. I mean, it really has to be nice. So I wanted to come here and give them the opportunity to make sure that everything that I did is up to standards and make sure everything is the way they do it. So one of the big differences between the Jeep and the Defender is that the Defender to me is more the romantic off-roading, you know, the safari, the adventure, a little bit of the expedition. But, you know, it to me, that's the epitome of what I love about off-roading. It's not so much taking a Jeep through the Rubicon. It's exploring in something like a Land Rover Defender. So I couldn't get a 130. My dream was to get a 130 and put a cab over on it, to put the system on it. And I couldn't get one in California. You can't anymore. California's changed its laws for imports. So So I bought the American version, which was the Jeep Gladiator, and it's been fantastic. And what we found is that it gives us all the confidence that the Defender sometimes won't.
Yeah.
And so I got the Mojave because I wanted to keep most of the suspension components stock. So it was easy to get parts for if we're out on a trail, you know, that, I mean, that's kind of a standard. So everything that I'm doing is, I don't want to call it a kit, but it's something that these companies all work together. I found the community here is really, really cool. And, you know, Goose works with Tiny Rig, and they both work with GP Factor and you know, Expedition. I mean, 813. I mean, everybody works together on this stuff, and it's really, really cool. It really is a community. So in working together, I think they share all the right information so that all the components work together. So it's not just in a relationship of people that are friendly, but it's their components. Everything fits as it should. Everything slots into place. I think this is the most precise bolt-on experience I've ever had. Like, you don't have to modify much of
Explain
anything.
what some of the Goose Gear stuff is, and then we'll get into the other stuff. What
Okay,
is Goose Gear
yeah.
doing?
So we've started with the IU cab over system, which is just absolutely, it's a canopy camper. It's absolutely fantastic. And then on top of that, that's your platform. The GP Factor are the small components and the MOLLE racks and things like that, which you do all your accessories with. And then the Goose Gear has provided this beautiful CNC cut interior. So all of my modular stacking, all of my storage solutions, all of that, like the fridge slide base and the seat deletes and the electrical panels, all of that is Goose Gear. And so I went to the factory yesterday, and Brian is a buddy of mine now, and he walked me through it, and it is incredible. I posted it on my social media last night. And it doesn't even touch on how fantastic this place is. You walk in and you smell that birch wood being CNC routered, and then he does a bedliner coating on it, so it's really, really strong and durable. But that stuff can amplify every detail. So they hand finish all of the CNC panels. They literally hand finish them with either a DA or hand sandpaper in the hands, like two or three guys. It really is a craftsman business, and it's fantastic. So I was really impressed. And then Garrett in the back is back there, you know, screwing them all together. And I mean, it's really a hands-on deal, and it is so cool to see that these products that I've dreamed of using and having for years, I'm here, and I've made friends, and we're doing it. We're building something together. I mean, you know this feeling, and it's. I'm so excited. I'm exhausted. They've been really long days. I'm up at 6 and in bed by 1 after I finish posting and editing. But yeah, I'm so excited. So I have a very short list of things that I need to finish now.
So the Goose Gear stuff is largely the floor, right? It's giving you a base on the floor, some storage underneath, instead of just a bumpy
Yeah.
carpet. It's giving you some structure to mount things, attach things to. It almost makes it look like a boat deck, like with storage, you know, flat, like
Yeah.
flush hatches and stuff. And then you can attach things kind of all over. And then their rear seat delete, because you have the Gladiator, it's the four-door, the pickup truck in the back, you know, the bed in the back. Did you do the full rear seat delete or half? Do you maintain one seat? So is the
I
truck
maintain one
essentially
seat, so
okay, so it's a three-seater now.
yeah, it's the three-seater. Well, I figured, you know, because I have a family, even though they don't live at home anymore, there's always a safety thing where if you're on the trail, you know, we can be the person and say, yeah, we got an extra seat. And plus, it's my daily driver. You know, my wife's been driving up more lately, which I love. My wife has adopted Gladys. We call her Gladys, Gladys the Gladiator, after my grandma. But because she was a gladiator. She was a tough old bird. I mean that in the best way. So she's adopted the truck very much, but it is a daily driver for us, especially in the winter. And so I wanted to make sure it still had function as much as possible. And that's the thing is the canopy camper is it's a glue in, it's a bolt in, so it doesn't come off with ease. everything's wired and plumbed through the, you know, through the body along the frame, and grommeted and sealed. So, you know, you're really committed to it. So I lost my pickup truck. And then once you install the goose gear, you know, you've basically eaten up some of that real estate too with cabinetry, which is well worth it, but it's just, you have to adapt to it. So having that extra seat is really handy, and having the seat delete platform is really handy because four bolts and the fridge slide comes out. And then I have a really nice platform with some lockable storage, which doesn't interfere with the idea of not having a seat there. The platform is actually more handy as a place to put large things than the back sometimes. And now we can put a little 2 or 3 inch like a dog sleep bed in there. And Pesto has easy access from, because I got the high deck. There's a high deck and a low deck. I got the high one.
I saw that.
And yeah, and so he can literally walk right off the armrest and be almost level with it now, which is, you know, he's a small dog, so he's more comfortable that way. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's just, they thought of everything. I mean, Brian Goose Gear, everything's pre-drilled and pre-plugged, and I mean, you know, it's pre-tapped, so you just put a screw straight into it. It's absolutely brilliant. All the cabinetry, he's got his own size of extruded aluminum, and the cappings on them are not plastic. They're aluminum, and they're a stronger aluminum. They're a lighter aluminum. It's like everything that he's done is almost proprietary to his company, and which really makes it unique, because when you go and you buy this profiled aluminum, which, you know, we've all used it for everything from 3D printers to cabinetry, it's of a certain size and it's universal. His isn't. So the challenge is, you know, God forbid you did break something or screw something up, you have to buy the parts from him because you can't go to the store and get it. But the good thing is that he's designed it in a way where it's stronger, lighter, and better than the off-the-shelf stuff that may come from anywhere in the world where quality isn't, you know, looked after as much. So you get what you pay for, and this is really a good example of that. The fit and finish is immaculate. There was something that wasn't quite right because he hadn't updated the file for the Gladiator Mojave, which has some differences and changes that are slightly different from even the Rubicon. And this was the first Mojave he had put his hands on personally. So he's like, I got to adjust the file for these two sections where the bolts, he didn't like the way the bolts went in. They didn't go in as perfectly flush as he wanted them to because something was different in that particular model. I mean, the attention to detail these guys have is that type of precision. You know, he's not eyeballing anything. Everything is calculated. And I love that. These guys are really, I mean, the Alucab fit together after all that shipping from South Africa, which is where they're made from. It's delivered in New Jersey and then shipped to Reno. And then I picked it up in Reno, took it back to my shop, moved it around on my forklift a few times. I put it on the Jeep and I clamped it all down where I thought it went. And you have to rivet on both sides of the entry, the doorway. You have to rivet on the inside two rivets and on the inside doorway two rivets. Those rivet holes lined up, all eight of them lined up. And yeah. I didn't have to hog them out. After all of that, they lined up and I went, whoa, like this thing is really well built. You get what you pay for in this world, man. You know, I'm really excited. This is probably the biggest thing I've ever done. And I'm really grateful.
Yeah.
These are some great people.
You know, maybe the shift from Land Rover to Jeep. Well, from Rat Rod to Land Rover to Jeep. You're realizing how supported the Jeep is in the aftermarket. Like, of course, we've been to to SEMA a million times. We've walked around, and you're right. You get what you pay for. There's definitely, you know, quality issues here and there, but the available sort of aftermarket support for Jeep, which is, you know, the reason why you go with
Huge.
Jeep. You know, certainly,
yeah,
you know, Ford is trying to get a piece of that with their Bronco and stuff, but and it's being pretty well supported. Probably a lot more support than I suspected or anticipated, given how new the Bronco is. So it's doing well there.
Well, everybody's so excited, you know.
Yeah,
the Broncos.
And, you know, and companies like Goose Gear that you're talking about that are so well established with Jeep are now making similar products or the same products, but for Bronco. So at least they figured out their quality and manufacturing and, you know, how to deliver, how to package it, like you explained, things like that. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. What's nice too, is because all of this stuff is modular, it's adaptive. So, you know, there's full-size trucks, mid-size trucks, smaller trucks. So IUCAP has done that too, in that they add a panel past the gull wing and they'll widen them. You know, so they have a roof system that's pretty standardized because trucks have a certain footprint. And then the length of the beds change. So they've adapted to that. So they fit everything from the, what's the little Chevy truck?
Colorado?
Yeah, the Colorado. Thank you.
Yeah.
They fit everything from the Colorado to the 250 or 350. I mean, you can go full size with these things. And then Goose Gear has done the same thing. So the interiors of those, you know, the deck is all the same height, I think, but the length of certain, or actually the deck height is different. I think the width is the same on all of them. So, you know, he's adapted all of his stuff to fit specific models. You know, Toyotas have a different gapping than Fords. They have a different gapping than Jeeps. So all this stuff, because it's just CNC, they can program all this in CAD or whatever files they're using and modify them to fit. So they can take a standard box and then change all the gapping in between and make it all work interior wise. It's a brilliant system. So yeah, it doesn't matter what you have. Chances are they have something to fit it. And Brian drives a vintage Land Rover, a Land Cruiser. Sorry, Land Cruiser. And he's built an interior for that too. I mean, it's so cool. I love seeing all this stuff. It's so innovative too. You know, a lot of this is very innovative. I'm really blown away. But yeah, the Land Rover, you know, it does have a huge support system. It's been around a long time. It's just not in the US. You know, there's European companies, South African companies, Australian companies that make stuff for those, like the Jeep world. It's just epic. But it's a little different. And it's, I don't know, it's different. The Land Rover is like my custom romantic kind of, I do certain things with it. But yeah. I love the fact that the Jeep is standardized with stuff that's proven and exists in the marketplace. It's contemporary. It's current, like you said. And I can hand my friend or I can hand my family, or dad made a comment on Instagram, like, I'm going to hand you the keys and you're going to take this out because it's awesome. And anybody can use it. It's really intuitive. It's really friendly. To where the Land Rover is finicky. You know, if it's less than 40 degrees, two of my doors don't want to shut. You know, it's just, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just, it's what it is. And that's part of the journey. But the Jeep, you know, I could give it to my kids. I could give it to my daughter, you know, and I can go, here, Sabina, or here, Lily, you know, to come out with us or take this out. Here's the route to go and have fun. Here's five things you need to know. To where on the Defender, it'd be like, okay, first of all, can you drive a stick?
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Okay. So you're at Goose Gear now, but you went to Tiny Rig as well. What's Tiny Rig?
I'm actually at Tiny Rig right now. I'm in their warehouse. I'm looking at these beautiful Scout cab overs. I'm looking at IUCAB. I'm looking at, you know, all kinds of Front Runner. You know, I'm looking at all kinds of cool stuff. And then 5010. So the owner, Stefan, from this company called 5010. It's 5010. They're out of Germany, and so he flew here from Germany the other day. The owner of the company. And was putting one of these on one of the new Ford trucks, brand new Ford trucks, dual cab, extended cab. This thing is just sick. And you take the bed off and these mount right to the frame. And oh my God, I mean, that's like Earth Roamer territory, where you see those big expedition vehicles that need a crane to take the wheel off. You know what I mean? It's one of those. So he's got a system. I don't want to say it's similar to IUCAP, but it's part of the roof of the cab is part of the sleep system. It's really nice, but it's next level, man. It's you know, huge tanks. These are expedition kind of vehicles. So they do all kinds of stuff here. I mean, I'm really, now that I'm in the warehouse looking around, I'm like, there's some stuff in here that I want to play with. Let's do some more builds.
Tiny Rig sells and installs IUCAB, but you had yours shipped to you. You installed it. And you put in a few things like the heater and stuff in the back, but you wanted to bring it down and then have these guys go through the wiring and electronics and make sure everything works and install correctly. And
Because here's the thing. I mean,
how close did you get?
I'm figuring it out, but they just know it. So so me paying or trading for their time, it is a much smaller calculation than me taking, you know, 10 times that and figuring it out and using a lot of tape.
Yeah.
These guys have all the right fittings. They have all the right everything. They've got bins of stuff that I can't even find, you know, they've got bins of, and they're just pros. And because we're going to show together and I'm going to do the expo in Arizona and the expo in Oregon, and, you know, we're going to try to hit as many expos as we can as an ambassador and show, I'll be showing it at the Goose Gear booth, in the expo in Arizona, next month. I think it's the middle of next month in May. So, you know, I want to make sure that there's nothing there that's compromised. There's nothing there that's cheap. I mean, I bought Matt tracks today because the GP Factor, Max tracks mounts only work with Max tracks. And I'm like, I bought the cheap ones because I didn't know any better and I didn't know how to use them and I didn't want to screw them up because you see them break. Yeah. And so I bought cheap ones, which is break 10 times more. So you buy 10 times more. So I spent the money and bought those today. And I'm like scratching my head going, okay, what do I got to sell to afford all this? But it's, I don't want, you know, the community to go over there and say, oh, cool, look at this. Why did they buy cheap Amazon tracks? Like, that's stupid. Look at those mounts. Why is there tape over that wire? No. We're doing everything up to their standard, because if I came here to get stuff done, my work can't lower that standard. You know what I mean? So we're doing it right.
How close, how close was your work when you brought it down there and they went through it, see what you did?
That's a very good point. And I said, please, I'm not embarrassed. Just point it out. And he goes, well, okay, there was two bolts missing here, but in the manual, those bolts aren't there. So you have to drill them and put them here. I'm like, oh, good to know. He's like, yeah, they're not really important, but it just helps. And he said, yeah, you left the plastic on the bed. You know, we don't do that. Most people do, but we don't, because we seal it up differently and we think it has a better bond. I really didn't do anything wrong. There was a couple things that I missed because they are so, you know, prolific with it. That is prolific or proficient? I'm starting to get that mixed up. Anyway, they're so good at it and have done so many that they just know what to do and they know what works because they're experienced. They all have rigs that are like epic. And so everything that they use, everybody owns that they use them. So they know them. They don't just install them and distribute them, but they use them. So they're really experienced. And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to do the wiring. I'm not going to plumb the heater. I'm not going to plumb the water system permanently. I'm not going to drill out anything that's unnecessary. I'm just going to take it there. And, you know, I committed and made some friends and got invited. And so I came here to get it done right. And I'm really glad I did. So I didn't do a lot knowing that I wanted to bring it here ultimately.
Yeah.
Okay. Plus it was winter. I couldn't seal the cab because it's winter in Tahoe. And for me to work in my shop on something this size, I would have had to pull out two or three vehicles and I couldn't even pull them out. I couldn't pull out the sea breacher on little tiny casters on an icy sloped driveway. You know what I mean?
It's, right. Yeah,
it was unrealistic. And I couldn't do it outside. I didn't have a place to work. So I kind of just stopped working and knowing that I'd bring it here in the spring and get it done right. So I worked on building those relationships over the winter so that I had the opportunity to bring it here in the spring and do it right and supervise and help. I mean, I ran wire under the frame because that's kind of a shitty job. And that was my job. You know, yeah. It's like, okay, you can't really do this wrong. Just run it here and zip tie it every, you know, 8 inches.
Yeah. did you make it down to Magnaflow? I know you were trying to connect with them as well, but it's kind of a short trip. You got a lot to do.
Yeah, I don't want to spring it on Richard, and it's so much closer to San Diego. It's a bit of a haul for me, but I am going to try to hit Lynxwell, which is the big screen, the big dash screen I have. I'm going to try to hit them later today because these guys, they say we're done. We're done in the next couple hours. So I think that'll give me about 3 or 4 hours window with Lynxwell. And if they're not leaving early today, I'm going to see if I can see them because they're only about half an hour away in Riverside. So that works. I thought Riverside was so much further away. It's for LA being so big. It's where I'm at seems to be relatively, you know, close to everything else. But
right, exactly.
Yeah, so I'm excited. Friday, but yeah, so I have to hit Maxwell.
It's going to come down to time of day, like when you go, because a 30-minute drive can be an hour and a 30-minute drive.
I know. So I'm going to check with them and see, because I don't want to keep anybody, you know. But I still have to meet with Gator Wraps and do the wrap. Synergy has reached out and wants to do some modification on the suspension, because I did add a lot of weight. And it's not near its weight capacity, but the way that the weight is distributed, being on top and sides, it the back end is a little bit squatty when I take off. And so we're going to just put some extra stuff there. And of course, you know, we talked to Jay about doing that too. I'd love to go see Richard and maybe get just a system that breathes better. I don't want much more noise, but you know, he's all about Jeeps and off-road, and he would totally understand that I want to tread lightly, but I would like to get a little more flow out of it, you know? And I got to put some kicker in there, and I think we'll be ready for Expo next month. And I got to make up some of this. So I got to paint some helmets, and I got to do an illustration, because, you know, I'm just very thankful that my wife isn't in a full panic right now.
Then when is the trip? July?
June? Okay, yeah. So our expedition is in July. So the Jeep will be pretty sorted and ready by Expo. And then I can finish out the Defender. The Defender's pretty much there. I'm going to do a little woodworking and just got to make a couple drawers, and it's pretty much done. You know, I'll plumb the other rock slider for air, and just make sure that I'll move my air, you know. But other than that, add some lights maybe. I got to do the solar too on that one. Vision X has a new solar component system, a power system that they're making, and they want to put that in Defender. So, and I went with Red Arc on the Jeep. I didn't think I was going to do it. I tried to use my C-Tech and some other stuff that I've worked with before, but with this system, their components are they make them ahead of time, so it's like a panel, and they're using Red Arc. So we had to just kind of be consistent. Pretty neat stuff. I got to say, Red Arc is kind of the top of the line in this business, and I see and understand why now. It's everything kind of work. You know, everything's kind of built to work together. So that's one of the things you got to do. You have to kind of lean into whichever market you're going to go into. I didn't think I could reach this one, but I may have an opportunity to work with Red Arc after this too. I like this, you know, buying some stuff and then meeting and building relationships. And they're like, well, you already bought some stuff, so we can help you out on some of this. And it's a nice way to just kind of get into it without going, hey, I'm going to the Arctic Circle, can you throw me a bunch of expensive stuff? You know, it's kind of a lame point of view. I mean, it's the business. It's what we do. You know, we look for partners, but it's really nice when you've invested some, and so they're a little more willing to work with you. You know, like, you're already invested. Let's figure something out with you. I like that. I think that's a nicer way to get into it if you can.
And so you've got solar on the Jeep, on the Alucab that pops up on the roof. It's all solar. And how much power does it provide? Like, what do you expect from it?
That's a really good question. So this is new to me, and getting a balance to that system, it is an equation, and these guys know it. And I said, well, I think these panels are roughly 100 watts each. They're like 108 or 106, whatever they are. But they're roughly 100 watts each, and they have a pretty high efficiency. It's a Renogy system, which is good. It's a good, you know, you can get on Amazon, you can get kits. They're pretty affordable. They have different levels. So we did keep the Renogy panels for now. And if they turn out to be not efficient or for whatever reason, then I can go with something else. But I already mounted them. They're good. Already mounted the plugs, everything's wired and ready to go. And then 200 seems to be okay for now. If I'm, you know, it depends on where you are in the world. Some places the sun is lower, or, you know, near the equator, obviously you probably have really good direct sun. So the power is really efficiently used. But yeah, I got a 200 watt inverter or 2000 watt inverter, because my 1000 probably wouldn't power the fridge. Maybe I can use induction. I can use an induction stove now, but you're not using everything all the time. If I'm going down the Oregon coast or going up the Oregon coast and it's foggy every day, and I'm only getting, you know, a low percentage of power back into the system when you're camping, Then yeah, you want to make sure you have enough battery storage. We went with two Battle Born 100 amp batteries, so that should give me a lot of time. And you know, I tried to use my Optimas and I tried to use some of the Renogys, and they're like, you know, with this system you really want to go with this type of battery, because these other batteries, some of the ones I had, like four different batteries I brought, they're like, you know, these don't work because of this, and they don't like the cold, and these don't charge as well off the alternator, and or you can't charge them off the alternator, and blah blah blah. Alaska is going to be easy because we're moving a lot. Every day we're moving, we're not parked for a week, so the alternator will charge the system, so I don't have to rely on solar. But I want to have that option to be able to be parked for 3, 4, 5 days a week, however long, and not worry about my power consumption. So we've set it up to last quite a while. I don't know what that's going to be, and it's hard to say because it really depends on where we're going to be and what kind of sun we have. But that's a big thing, and I don't know a lot about it, and it's exciting.
The truck has the stock set up with the stock battery, and it powers, mm-hmm. you know, for all of the truck and accessories. Then you run two separate batteries that charges either from the solar or the alternator, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You never want to go after your main battery. I mean, right. It's risky, and you have to have some sort of gateway so that if it starts to drain that battery past the point of you being able to start your vehicle, you need that gateway in there. So it goes, whoa, 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 you can't use any more power because you won't be able to drive away. So you really want ultimately a separate system that's tied in only in that, hey, the solar will also charge your main battery. It's kind of a little bit of a two-way street, but yeah, you never want to compromise your main battery. The Jeep, because of the start stop, has two batteries. It has like a little motorcycle kind of battery too.
Yeah.
And it's got a 120 plug on the side, but they're like, don't touch that thing. Just it's there for reasons that you won't be using.
Yeah. Right.
You know, this system is more than adequate.
So if you're going to stop with the crew and you park for, you know, 2-3 days and you set up a campsite, and then what? So when you set up your campsite, do you rotate the Jeep like 2 or 3 times a day to follow the sun, make sure those panels are popped up, or yeah. you know, get you a know, little bit of that sunlight?
That's a really good point. So you do, when you can, you know, there's two types of solar, right? There's fixed solar that's on your roof, and then there's portable solar. So yeah. CTEC has the great portable solar system. I've used Gold Zero in the past with 100-watt panels, and those are great because I can stick those outside and point them at the sun when it rises. So before we go to bed, I already have them fixed and ready at an angle when the sun rises. So I'm going to maximize that while we're breaking down camp and recharge my system. But that was all portable. So now that it's fixed, I have to consider that. So if it's a windy night and I can't face where the sun's going to rise because I'm now pitched at an angle, so I could attract that sun, then that's something you got to think about. Maybe I do have to rotate
you gotta
the vehicle.
Rotate the vehicle. So in the morning, before you get up, the sun is already hitting it.
Yeah.
And then the two batteries.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm assuming everything is designed around overlanding, which means to the extent possible, everything's built to be the lowest draw possible, right? You don't want like a wildly inefficient refrigerator or heater or something like that. But you know, you want to be able to have enough reserve power that throughout the night when there's no sun, you can run your heater. If it gets cold and you're in the back of that thing sleeping, you want to be able to have a little bit of heat going on throughout the night. You don't want to wake up as a popsicle.
Exactly. And that's probably the biggest challenge too, is your rig insulated? So I insulated some of the panels before we covered them up. I have a Dickinson heater, which was developed for the marine industry, and it's really cool. It's propane. It's really, really efficient. And the fan is really a low fan, so it doesn't throw a lot of air volume out, but it definitely fills a small space very quickly. And it's actually made for a space probably 4 or 5 times the size of the cab over. So you end up putting it on the lowest setting and letting it run throughout the night, or just warming everything up to an ambient temperature and then letting it cool down slowly through the night. But really cool systems. And the only problem there is that they're propane. So the propane, you know, you have to have a good enough tank, and you have to know that if you run that thing all night on low, with only a half an hour on high to get everything up to temperature, that you may have 6 days or 8 days or 4 days of propane in a 10, you know, I don't know. There's people who've had experiences, and we all draw from them first. And then you just have to see what your usage is and how conservative you want to be. But that's a problem, because in Alaska, I mean, we're going in July, it shouldn't be that cold, but if it is cold, where am I going to get that filled? So, but yeah, the fridge draw, I'm going with a National Luna 50 liter dual zone. I'm waiting to see if they have the dual zone in stock, but I'd like to go with the dual zone, which has a fridge and freezer. You know, you can swap it out. Yeah, it's going to use a lot more power on a freezer, but the technology, even in those, has really gotten advanced. You know, it's really advanced in the last few years. Even the insulation's better. You know, the power supply is much more efficient. Mm-hmm. And like I said, unless you're running dual freezers and opening it up every 30 seconds and leaving it open, you know, it's going to be working pretty hard, and it's going to suck power. To where my older ARB that I've had for 4 or 5 years, if I mess with those settings and try to get it much colder, it starts to lose efficiency really fast. And I got the insulation jacket, but you know, every time you open them, you lose, I would assume, a very large quantity of cold in there. So you kind of want to, you just want to plan it. That's part of overlanding. It's just, everything's thought through with experience. Unless you just bury yourself in YouTube for 6 months, like we did during COVID, and research everything that everybody else has done to get a good head start. But other than that, you build these things to suit your needs and your lifestyle. And whether you have a dog or a spouse or kids, that can all change. And there's so many scenarios out there, and there's some great YouTube channels. There's really some good series out there. And now that more people are doing it, there's more products, and there's just good stuff. You know, you just don't want the knockoff stuff, because it really is subpar.
Yeah.
And you really can waste your money on stuff that just doesn't work well.
I mean,
it's a shame.
It's quite an investment, though. So when I know you're doing a lot, you know, paying and trading and working and doing stuff. But, you know, if you had a guess, what would it cost to outfit a rig like yours?
Well, to do what I did, I mean, first of all, I started off with about, you know, the highest end Jeep you can buy, which is 60,000 plus.
Yeah.
By the time you're done with the cab over and all the installs, if you're paying retail, you could be in it 100 easy. I'd say 80, 90. You could be in it 100.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, like if you, I don't know how much these scouts go for. Now they're more finished inside, but a good cab over that's made for off-road, that's a big difference. A cab over that's made for off-road, you know, you could be 100 just in a cab over. So, you know, and then if you do all the suspension on your Jeep, and I mean, people spend 100 grand on Jeeps. It's not uncommon.
I was looking at some of the Alucab really stuff, and that's, you know, 10, 12, 13, 14,000 bucks.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, just the power board to power from Red Arc and the componentry, you know, they get 2, 3, 4 grand for these. And then you're looking at install time, because, you know, these guys, again, you pay someone who knows what they're doing for their time, but they're doing it in a fraction of the time it would take you. So yeah, it's just math and time. Our time is our biggest asset right now, our greatest asset. So it's just, are you paying for someone else to do it in less time? Or are you going to tackle it yourself and try to figure it out and spend a lot more time? It's economics. I'd rather keep the reliability intact by working with people that I've now been, you know, I can associate with and work things through and learn from, and still we take care of each other in whatever way it is, and have it done right, than for me to kind of fiddle and screw something up and burn up a very expensive component. You can hurt these batteries. You can hurt an inverter. The inverters are not cheap. They're $600 to $800. The batteries are $800 or $900, depending on what battery you get. And if you deplete that battery the wrong way and you recharge it the wrong way, you can start diminishing the capacity of that battery very quickly. And you know, you don't want to make those mistakes. I'm not very well versed in electrical, and I'm still getting to understand all the equations and balances of all this. There's a lot to know. There's a lot of information out there, and some people probably have a better foundation than I do. But you know, you can budget. I mean, there's nothing wrong with throwing a tent in the back of whatever vehicle you got, and a couple pots and pans and some wood, and going out and camping and doing just what we do. It's just, there comes a time where you kind of evolve into something and want to do more. And for me, it's not a fantasy, because we live in Tahoe, and literally with half an hour's notice, we're camping. Like, Misha's had a long day at work. My son had a long week in the kitchen, and we're messaging each other at 5:30, and they're like, "Hey, I'm off in half hour. Let's just go down to Tamarack Lake and camp for a night." It's like, okay, yeah. I'll get food. You pick up this on your way home. Everybody gets home. We jump in the vehicle. I've already got it warmed up, and we go 30 minutes away, and there's nobody there. We're on a lake all by ourselves. We watch the sunset because it's that part of the season, a little mosquito spray. We build a fire. We eat sushi because we drove 20 minutes and we could eat sushi. I mean, if you use it in whatever way makes you happy, it is so fulfilling. And yeah, that just replenishes that rough, hard week that we've all had, being able to afford this stuff by working our ass off all week. Yeah. You know, you got to use it. It can't be a mall crawler. You got to use this stuff, you know. It's a great life. I mean, I want to get emotional right now because I'm really excited to use this. And this is our evolution. We had a different system. We were living out of bins. We had a rooftop tent that was really just, it seen better days. And we were 10 days in Moab. And my wife said, "I really don't want to live out of boxes and bins and live in this rooftop tent and be taping up the seam because the zipper doesn't work anymore. And, you know, can we do that cab over thing that you really wanted to do?" I'm like, "Yes." And here we are. And I can't wait to use it.
Yeah, no, it's good. But like you said, I mean, you didn't just jump into it. Like you started, you worked your way up to it and figured out like what works and what doesn't work. Not just the products, but you experience like what the life is like, you know, spending like, "Oh, yeah, I'm going to do an overnight, you know, nearby." Yeah. And then I'm going to do a two or three nights nearby. And you're right. And then we realize, you know, the bin seems like it was a really good idea when I was walking through the container store. But now I realize, it's leaky and it's cold or it's hot or it's whatever. Like it doesn't, it's not proper. And then you go out there with other people and you see some of the things that they're doing. You get to play around with it and like, "Hey, you know, what are you doing for a camper? What are you doing for a table? How are you generating power? Like what sort of, what have you done?"
Oh, it's a rabbit hole.
It's a rabbit hole. Listen, like anything in the automotive aftermarket is, but yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, come on. I'm in my 50s. My kids are grown. We've experienced the tents in the back of the Volkswagen. You know, I mean, we've done all that all of our lives. We've had to drive a little ways and work really hard to set up camp. Well, now we drive a long ways and try not to spend a lot of time having to set up camp or tear down camp. My setup right now, I can be cooking in probably less than 5 minutes. So we spend all day exploring, all day. And we're like, "Hey, it's starting to get dark. Let's just go a little bit further," because we don't have to spend an hour setting up camp.
Like, yeah, if you're tired, if you were doing stuff outside, hiking and doing all that stuff.
Exactly.
And you get back, you're like, "Oh, it's going to take an hour to just get some water boiled."
let's just sleep on the roof. I mean, right? And so that's just part of it. It's just a different experience. It's not necessarily better. It's just a different experience. So now we just trade one thing for the privilege of another. And that's kind of just how it's evolved. And I mean, but you know, you look at a Sprinter. I mean, look at a Sprinter that you can live in.
Yeah.
You're spending house money. If you start getting into like Earth Roamers and like these big expedition vehicles, these full size trucks, you're spending like mansion money for some people. So, you know, it's not an inexpensive lifestyle. I'm not even going to call it a hobby. If you use it, it's a lifestyle. But you know, people live in these things that they go, "You know what? I am tired of the hustle and bustle. We're selling the business. We're selling our home." And they get a motorhome. I mean, that's been a classic thing for retirees, people that are kind of retired forever. Well, this is just a little more adventurous version of that because we want to go off-road. And, you know, like I said, if you get a camper shell or a cab over and you're off-roading, it's a different system because you can't take, you know, something, a two-wheel drive Sprinter that's low to the ground and go on some heavy-duty trail. I mean, you could, but you're going to.
Right. It's a different type work of everything camping. Inside that's more like travel.
It really is. Know,
travel America, hit the campsites and do some hiking.
Exactly.
And you're not really going off the beaten path. There are versions of the trucks.
I think, exactly.
I think Ford Transit, they're coming out. They just came out with the like the four-wheel drive, the kind of lifted transit and stuff. But yeah. And then there's, you know, Michael Anthony's version of camping. And he's got, I don't know.
People call it glamping. And all this stuff. It's like, who cares?
My thought on it is this. Is yeah. So he's got a $1 million motorhome and he goes out to a property in Las Vegas. My thing is he likes it. He enjoys it. He earned it and he does it quite often and it makes him happy. And he brings the grandkids and stuff and it couldn't be any fucking happier doing it. So great, great for him. Right. Just that's
and
the
that
version.
Is what it's all about.
That's the version he wanted to do. And that's he's doing it right. He's just doing it. So I love that.
I do too. You're next.
Yeah, listen, I wanted to get into the truck and stuff and the Jeep, and I'm glad we did. And but before we wrap up, I got to touch on this story real quick because this is funny.
Oh, so, dude, please. I'm sorry. I can just gush about this all day. So,
no,
so
no, it's fine.
Thank you.
We've got a few minutes. But so all over the news, Arnold Schwarzenegger has been filling this pothole out in, you know, I don't know, Santa Monica, where he lives, over by like Santa.
Yes, what we've all wanted to do.
And he was just saying for weeks and weeks, doesn't really know how it happened, the pothole, but for weeks it's been there and hasn't been filled. It's dangerous because bicycles go there and they have to go into the road to go around it. And he's very famously rides his bike all over the place. Although a healthy guy, not necessarily quite the young man he was once, right? So he wants to be safe about it. And I guess there was at some point the city or somebody said, oh yeah, we had a crew out there and they did some maintenance. They cut a hole in the ground and the fill crew, like, I don't know, got overlooked or didn't make it out there. So Schwarzenegger's on the news with a couple of his friends. They're filming it and he's got asphalt, he's got shovels, he's got his crews, and they're filling this pothole. And he just put it up on social media, and he's like, sometimes you just got to take care of it yourself, right? What's funny is Adam Carolla, in his neighborhood, not the house he has now, but his previous house, in his neighborhood, when it would rain, the water would just... There was a water drain like off the street and it did not work. It didn't work because the water would just flow over it and around it. There was nothing there to make it work. And it would flood the street. Cars are getting flooded. Ugh. You can't walk your dog. You can't ride your bike. The neighbors have complained
Terrible.
A bunch of times to the city going, what's going on here? Why is this constantly just a puddle? Like, almost year round, it's just a flood of water. And Adam, you know, being a big home improvement guy, was just like, this is fixable. Like, I can fix this. And he came up with this idea of like, there's this drain. And if you put, I don't know, like a 6-inch high wall behind the drain, that would be enough. You know, it's literally just a stack of bricks, right? You could just pour some cement or stack of bricks, and that would prevent the water from going past the drain, and it kind of filters it into the drain, and it really would solve the problem. Adam went and he did it, and he fixed it, and it fixed the problem, and the neighbors were all happy. Everybody was happy.
Oh wow!
And then he went to sell the house. And the inspector came by, the city inspector, and he's like, what's this? And he's like, there was a flooding problem in the street, but we fixed it. And they lost their shit. Like, they were so mad. And they were basically saying, you can't sell your house. until this is put back. And he goes, but it's done correctly. Yeah, they were basically blocking the sale of the house, or they wasn't going to let the money out of extra escrow or something. Like they were really pissed about it. And he's like, but it's done correctly, and it's fine. And they're like, this is not the way you do things. You can't just fix broken stuff on your own. He's like, why? If you encourage people to do it, so much stuff would be fixed. And they go, well, we have engineers. And they go, yeah, you didn't engineer it. And he goes, I knew you were going to say that. So yes, I know this engineer. I sent him my plans. He made some adjustments, signed off on it. I have an officially licensed engineer that wrote off on this. And they were like, but it wasn't our engineer. And he's like, you're out of your fucking mind. And he's like, I'm not going to fix it. And they just kept fighting him on it and fighting him on it. And I think, you know, he got the house sold, and I don't think he had to bust it out. I think you just finally called him and said, if you don't like it, you go remove it, and just got them to the point where they're like, stop showing up in my office. But they were so pissed. So as soon as I saw this with Schwarzenegger, wow. I love what you're doing, Arnold. You're going to get in trouble for it. Like that's LA. That's LA. Like you saw a problem, you fixed it, and you fixed it probably the right way, and you're going to get in trouble for it. And now it's going to be a PR thing. Are enough people going to go, hey, good job, Schwarzenegger, that the city's going to go, well, we can't go after him with this. I hope that's the case.
Right.
Because if he gets a letter in the mail and they like fine him or tell him he has to dig it up so they can bring an engineer out there or do it themselves. You think you got press now? Wait till that shit happens. And by the way, this is like a 2 foot wide, 8 foot long trench going across the street. And it's like cars are falling in it and bicycles are falling in it. And it looked like somebody had patched most of it, but not like the bike lane, like the tight spot of it when you see the pictures. So he fills it. So it's not like he's like, hey, this is a 6-inch round pothole and, you know, my bike tire clunks in it. It's like, this is a trench you did not
fix.
Yeah, you did not fix. And anyway, I just saw this. I was like, this is so LA, like he's going to get in trouble.
Well, I'll tell you, it doesn't sound as bad as Tahoe because they fill them. And the next day you're like, wait a minute, this was filled last night when I came home, and then just wide open again, man. It's
wide
just,
open again. Look, know, I right by my warehouse just, at the stoplight, I saw a city crew patching a pothole, but the entire road from one light to the other light, like down the middle, it's all potholes. So I literally saw them filling. I'm like, oh, great. They're going to fix the road. I went back out there 20 minutes later. They were gone. They fixed one pothole.
there's
probably some sort of, I don't know, just some sort of like rule going, oh, we have to fix stuff that's more than like 8 inches in diameter. Right.
Yeah,
you know, if it's like 6 inches, they're like, no, we don't deal with that. Like, but you're out there and you got the buckets and you got the asphalt and you're, you know, like, really, what are we talking about? Another 30 minutes of work to just, you know, just move your little, just like you're talking to like a shovel worth of each thing. And it's LA.
Right? We don't know. We can guess that it's economics. We can guess that it's priority. We can guess all kinds of things. But yeah, the logic is, well, there's one right there. Why don't you just throw that extra shovel there and give it a whack? You're here.
In Adam's stand-up special that he did a couple of years ago, he's been complaining about years, but his stand-up special that we filmed as a live show would have like pictures in the back, like a slideshow, right? And it was funny. And You're going to start to pay attention to this. When you start driving around, you pay attention to this. As you drive around, you see the stripes painted in the road, the yellow stripe, white stripe, double white stripe. Now, when you look at all those stripes, look for the manhole covers. Now that they're called like service access ports, because it's
right.
Manhole covers. And they're always painted over, but somebody goes in there and does something, and they never line up the paint lines again. It's so easy. You watch, and see if there's a yellow line going down the street, and then all of a sudden there's like a tilted dash because like a hyphen in the middle of the road because they couldn't get that yellow line to line up. It's I'm telling you, once funny. You start noticing it, you're gonna realize it's gotta be every one of them. Like, it's so ridiculous.
Oh, that's hilarious.
How many it is. But anyway,
that's hilarious.
That's it. Well, kudos to Schwarzenegger.
So someone told me, I don't know the accuracy of it, but someone told me that it's an environmental thing too, that the patch material that they use was, you know, very high in petroleum. It had something in it which was environmentally unfriendly. And so the newer stuff is much softer and it just doesn't hold as well. So it has to be done in more frequency, which obviously is more labor intensive. And because we're short of labor and materials, they don't get done as quickly. So there's obviously some sort of breakdown in the system between bureaucracy and environmental stuff. Who knows? But, you know, everything's changing and it may just be something else that we have to deal with now, and at least in California. And it sucks because Tahoe is really, really suffering. It's hurting people. It's hurting cars. It's blowing off, ripping off front ends. You know, I said it before, we've seen vehicles with entire wheel assemblies just ripped off the car. And it's really a shame because, you know, I mean, you can't blame the guys trying to get it done. You kind of have to blame the system that's not allowing them to get it done in a timely manner with proper tools, you know. Sucks.
Yeah, so we there's this version, as you said, of like the softer road. I noticed in Arizona years and years ago when I was out there, they're building a freeway and they had certain sections of the freeway that they sort of described it as like a rubber infused asphalt. And the reason why
is exactly.
Everyone was complaining, going, hey, we all live here. You're going to put a freeway in the middle. And then they came up with this thing that it made all the cars quieter because there's so much road noise. And it really did work well. It was quiet. You drive down the freeway, and when you hit those sections, it's quiet. How long does it last? I don't know. And now that we're moving towards so many EVs and these things weigh 7, 8, 9, 10,000 pounds vehicles.
That's a good point.
If we were constantly loading the freeways with 7,000, 8,000 pound cars, you know, maybe double the weight of everything that's now, is like, what is that ultimately going to do, especially to the harder, older, fragile sections of the road like you're talking about in Tahoe?
That's a very good point. You know, also with more Amazon and more mail order stuff and more supplies and more people living in Tahoe, we probably have a lot more trucks coming up and down the road. And then if those trucks become EV trucks, you know, they're going to be twice as heavy. And yeah, that's a consideration I didn't think about. Yeah, absolutely. That's got to be something.
The cracks are super important, like when you get into Tahoe, because if there's cracks in the road, then the water gets in, it freezes, it expands, it opens a crack, and then it's
and
just
a plow hits it, bam.
Yeah, and then it breaks apart.
Ripping.
Right. Right. All right. That's enough for today.
Oh man. Oh, that was fun, Matt.
Yeah. that's good. We're gonna wrap it up. shiftandsteer.com is the website. Follow Aaron on social media because you're gonna go see all the cool stuff he's been doing to the Jeep. Everything we talked about today, you're gonna see.
Yeah.
And with his pictures and his video. So follow Aaron Hagar on Facebook and Instagram is where you, I believe you've been posting it.
Yeah. Facebook and Instagram mostly. Yeah.
And I
appreciate
it.
And then you and WinBrad stuff. And
Bradley underscore Fanshaw, I remember, and WinBrad stuff. Yeah. And he talked about doing a live version. We might go down and do that. And Bravago, the hard seltzer, where we picked up 9 more stores in San Diego.
Congratulations.
So starting to grow a little bit there. We got a place in we got a store here in LA, and we're trying to get into more locations, but we can also ship it online to 38 states. So Drink Bravago is the website. We also just won a bunch of awards for it as well. So just, you know,
hey, Matt, that's a game changer. Good job.
Yeah, we won a gold award and 2 silvers for our 3 flavors, and our vanilla orange cream won best vanilla flavor overall among every seltzer. So happy about that.
Congratulations.
So, hopefully you guys, thank you. Hopefully you guys all get a chance.
That's where it starts. Right. That's where success starts, Matt. Well, not starts, but that's a huge, yeah.
Well,
starts
we got a long way to go.
And all your hard work. But seriously, that that changed Cabo Wabo back in the day when we started winning awards, or when Dad started winning awards. And everything kind of really started to take off from there, because it kind of validates and you know, it makes, let other people know that, hey, this is good. Look, we won a bunch of awards, and it's not political. It's because it's good. So good job. Yeah, man. Congratulations.
I appreciate that. Thank you. All right, guys, until next time, we'll see you guys later next week.
All right. Cheers.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.
Across America, BP supports more than 275,000 jobs to keep energy flowing. Jobs like updating turbines at one of our Indiana wind farms, and producing more oil and gas with fewer operational emissions in the Gulf of Mexico. It's and, not or. See what doing both means for energy nationwide at bp.com/investing in America.
Spring has sprung, and that means it's time for the Bay Bridge Boat Show, April 12th through 14th at the Bay Bridge Marina in Stevensville, Maryland. Spend a day on the bay filled with food, music, and fun for the whole family. Take a stroll on the docks or sit in on free boating seminars. The boating season starts at the Bay Bridge Boat Show. For tickets and info, visit baybridgeboatshow.com.
Three great words, free fries Friday, especially when they're used in that exact order. Get a free medium fries with $1 minimum purchase.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Valid one time on Fridays at participating McDonald's through 12/31/24. Excludes tax, must opt into rewards.